We'll begin our service with the opening hymn printed on the tan order of, or the blue order of service, which you will find in your hymnals. Please stand in body or spirit. Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Winona. My name's John Chernega. I've been a member for about 5 years. I serve on the Sunday Service Committee. If you're new to our Sunday Fellowship, we especially welcome you. We hope you enjoy the service and find yourself challenged and supported for your work in the world. We invite you to stay for coffee and conversation and picnic?
Yes.
And picnic after the service. Are there any introductions by our greeter or anyone who'd like to introduce themselves?
I'm going to introduce my mom, Shirley Ravis. She's been down before, but she's
here. Welcome back. We just have one announcement this morning. Laura, on behalf of the Sunday Service Committee, has an announcement about surveys.
Good morning. We are in the process of collecting your feedback and suggestions. So if you already filled out a survey, we thank you very much. And if you haven't, what I'm going to do is just pass out blank surveys, a stack on each side. If you've already filled out one, just keep passing. If you haven't, I'm also going to... Can I get you to pass it?
Thank you.
I'm also going to pass around this little pail which has pens and pencils in it. And my goal is by the end of today, the pens and pencils will be back in here, as will your filled out surveys. And please do remember, if you make a suggestion for something you would like to present, it really helps if you put your name on there, too.
Thank you.
Well, today is our Hope Service. It marks the end of our UU year and serves as an opportunity for us to celebrate new beginnings. At this time, we will affirm our community by saying together the chalice reading as printed in the order of service. We have come together today.
Now is the time to make this our place. We are Unitarian Universalists. We light this chalice. It is our symbol. It represents all of the important things which make us who we are and which hold us together. Let us create our space together and make for ourselves a safe place to grow and learn and to be fully who we are.
Please stand in body or spirit while we sing number 347 in the hymnal, 347, Gather the Spirit.
Thank you.
I place this shell in the water in recognition of our Unitarian Universalist Principle Number 2, Justice, Equity, and Compassion in Human Relations. We invite you now to place a shell in the water in celebration of or in concern for a person or an event in your life, so that we may share in your joy or give you comfort in your sorrow.
I'm putting a shell in the water for my cousin, Brenda, who is suffering from mental illness. She had a manic episode in Norway with my sister and my other cousin and my auntie, and had to have her husband fly over and help bring her back. And they made it back safe and sound on Thursday night, but she's really struggling. And I think, you know, that my sister was there and trying to keep things together was a real stress on her. But it's more open now in the family, you know, that she's, you know, what a manic kind of episode looks like. And so I just pray for the strength for everybody to really help come together and support Brenda. And she's just the sweetest person in the world, and so we all just really love her and hope that she gets the support that she needs and is willing to accept the support that's being offered.
I'm going to put in the shell in the water, two shells. One, last Sunday we were in Minneapolis for Jenny's graduation from graduate school. Doesn't mean that she's done by any means, but still a term and a half, basically, but still a very, very wonderful thing to celebrate in our family, really exciting thing, and having her back at UU for change. The three previous Sundays, I was out driving tractor, missing UU, missing stand service. In an era of disrupted climate, when it rains Monday through Friday afternoons, cold and wet, you got to work on Sundays. It's really a tough thing for me, but it is so nice to be back here.
Put a shell in for Bob's sister. Just got out of the hospital yesterday. She had like crazy high blood pressure, and then it crashed, and her blood volume's low, and she doesn't have any iron in her blood, and they don't know why, and there's two teams of doctors in disagreement about what's going on, so they're watching her really closely, and just, you know, whatever good energy we can have for her, appreciate it, thanks.
It's been 2 years since someone in yellow has been with us.
Oh, Grandma Suzanne just came yesterday.
Grandma Suzanne.
This is for the healing power that you all obviously have. A good friend of mine had in, you know, from Las Cruces and New York, had an operation that was serious, and she's healing very, very well. A fellow Unitarian. Thank you, thank you.
Well, my brother Emmett came home from college.
We'll now take a moment of silence for these joys and concerns, both spoken and unspoken. We are humbled to know that we may only have one moment for kindness in which to give or not give. May this offering remind us to be ever ready for the opportunity for kindness. We affirm our fellowship and service to the larger world through our generous gifts as we pass the offertory baskets. If you are giving a portion of your pledge and you're giving cash, please note it on one of the envelopes provided. Will the children please come forward for today's story? We don't have RE today. So this is it, kids. This story is called Hank Finds Inspiration. I wish our yard wasn't so flat and boring, sighed Stanley. I wish I could touch the clouds, said his friend Hank, the snake. We need some inspiration, Hank. That'll fix things, said Stanley. See you later, Hank. I'm off to the city to look for inspiration, said Stanley as he sped off. Hey, I need some too, yelled Hank. So Hank jumped into a cab. To the city, please. I'm going to find some inspiration. Hank got out at 51st and Burnham. Whoa, this city is big. I have no idea where to find inspiration. Excuse me, mister. Could you tell me where I could get some inspiration? Inquired Hank.
I get mine with a good cup of coffee at Joe's on Throckmorton. One block that way,
inspired the man in the hole. Pardon me, I'm told that I can get some inspiration here. Said the man, who seemed kind of grumpy. This is where I get the day's news. You might try the library a block uptown. Thank you, and sorry to disturb you, said Hank. Excuse me, ma'am, where can I find inspiration here? Hank whispered. It depends on what you're interested in. I think you might find it at Duffy Park, said the lady, smiling sweetly. Hi, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I understand I can find inspiration here. This is a lovely place to enjoy nature, but I always find inspiration listening to the jazz trio at the end of the park, said the nice man. Excuse me, a gentleman said that I can find inspiration here. Is that so? That's cool, said the musician, playing the big bass. But personally, I find inspiration at Suzanne's Flowers on Sutter. Pardon me, I can't seem to find any inspiration. What does it look like? Inquired Hank. Inspiration is a feeling that you get inside, Suzanne said. If you follow your heart, you can quite often find it anywhere. Hank headed up the sidewalk when a sign caught his eye. It said, Gallery Open. Hank decided to have a look. Hank entered the gallery and immediately noticed a huge, twisty sculpture. His heart started beating fast. I would like to buy this magnificent work of art, said Hank, beaming with excitement. I'm sorry, said the gallery owner. It has just been sold, and besides, we are closing. Suddenly, Hank felt so very sad. Maybe it was time to head for home. Hi, Hank. How was your day? Asked Stanley. Not so great. I thought I found inspiration, but someone else beat me to it. How about your day, Stanley? Terrific! I found inspiration, and now the yard isn't so flat and boring, Stanley said proudly. Besides, something told me you might like it. I love it! Now I can touch the clouds, It looked like I found some inspiration after all, thanks to you, Stanley. Somewhere in the University of Chicago, there's a clock. Since 2012, it's been set 5 minutes to midnight and left there. It's one of those stop clocks, not entirely like the unlike the one we've got in the back of the room, except it's only right once a day. This is the doomsday clock, which warns us that we're a mere 5 minutes away, metaphorically speaking, from the apocalypse. According to their website, thebulletin.org, the clock is meant to convey how close we are to destroying our civilization with dangerous technologies of our own making. Not only is our time short, but the forces conspiring to wipe us out have proliferated. While the central focus of the clock in the past was nuclear proliferation, scientists have now added environmental catastrophe, super virulent strains of deadly viruses, and unchecked advances in technology. Their warning becomes clear. The more we know about the world around us, the more obvious it becomes how fragile our existence is. These are concerns that not only threaten our way of life, they threaten our life on this planet. The atomic scientists who run the organization have symbolized the end of the world, I think, in an interesting way, by using a clock. It's not hard to imagine the steady, constant ticking sound as a time bomb. An unceasing reminder of our imminent destruction. Welcome to Hope Sunday, everyone. We asked members of the congregation to share stories of hope, and no one volunteered. Did you get that? There is no hope. So instead, since it's the last Sunday of the year, I'll be talking about the apocalypse. The best-known apocalypse, the one that gets entire bookshelves dedicated to it in Barnes & Noble today, is the book of Revelation in the New Testament. In fact, the Greek word for revelation is apocalypse. According to theologian Greg Carey, apocalypses, they with their angelic instructions and messianic visits and off-the-wall descriptions of creatures and events and final judgments, were kind of a thing for about 500 years. There are several examples of apocalyptic visions in both Christianity and Judaism that kind of sprang up from 300 BCE to 200 in the Common Era. These include the Book of Daniel, the Shepherd of Hermas, the apocalypses of Abraham and Peter. And for the most part, according to a theologian named Warren Carter, the intent behind these works was to convince believers to choose orthodoxy over compromise, to basically double down on faith instead of choosing to work with other people and incorporate different kinds of belief systems into their religion. And it promised great rewards. So thus, despite the four horsemen and the army of locusts with the heads of people and the seas of fire and glass, Revelation is meant to give people hope. Hope for the near future, actually, rather than kind of the way it's read today as kicking the end of the world football down a few yards every so often. Carey claims that scholars understand that Revelation originally spoke to the conditions of its own time and place. It offered a specific group of first century Christians not only hope for the future, but also an interpretation, a revelation, if you will, of the world they inhabited. So it's addressed to these seven churches who had very specific problems. Basically, their problems were dealing with the tricky situation of mixing the early Christian practices in a society, the Roman society, where rulers were worshipped as gods, and participation in different kinds of religious festivals was considered mandatory, even though it was frowned upon to attend both the Roman festivals and the Christian festivals. These specific issues were never intended as a sword to hold over Christian heads for millennia. Instead, it basically said to early Christians, things may look tough now, but check out all these monsters and battles and prophecies. You've got a lot to look forward to. We can assume that the specific issues in those specific seven churches have long since passed. The warnings on the book of Revelation seem to have expired. Don't tell Barnes & Noble. Of course, the Judeo-Christian tradition is not the only source of apocalypse. Consider these chilling words. Our earth is degenerate in these later days. There are signs that the world is speedily coming to an end. Bribery and corruption are common. Children no longer obey their parents. Every man wants to write a book, and the end of the world is evidently approaching. Roughly translated, these words were found on a clay tablet written in Assyria in 2800 BCE. According to the Smithsonian, the Assyrian Empire lasted an additional 2200 years after this had been written. Then the Babylonians attacked the Assyrians in about 600 BCE. But of course, that wasn't the end of the world. It was a change in the world. Thank goodness we never had to live in a world where children didn't obey their parents and people took up writing. Indeed, we've lived through dozens of apocalypses, from something as minor as a scary planetary alignment or a particularly convincing radio broadcast, to actual world-changing events like the Industrial Revolution and world wars. History is full not of apocalypse, but catastrophe. The changes that aren't the end of the world, but could signify the end of an era. Sometimes huge groups of people are threatened by events like famine, civil war, persecution. These events often prompt in people the simple belief that things are better somewhere. These events caused people to assess their dismal surroundings and respond with the survival instinct that we call hope. These events prompt people to seek new horizons, the quintessential American immigrant experience. Our history is made of hope. It was hope that first sent the pilgrims across the Atlantic, hope for the opportunity to practice their religion. It was hope that sent the waves of immigrants that followed, the Dutch, the French, the Irish, the Italians. Hope drove these immigrants to come together and create the really beautiful, but frankly sometimes messed up country we call America. But not only that, hope has caused us to learn from our mistakes. It was one of the many watchwords of the Civil Rights Movement. A hope for a stronger, fair society inspired three waves of feminism to push for change in the way that American women are treated. Hope is the underlying sentiment when LGBT kids are told, it gets better. Hope for a better world is the driving force that prompts us to see, to really see the scariest parts of our world, and to strive to do something to make them less scary. This is a time of year when a lot of eras come to end, but in microcosm. We're moving into summer, people are graduating and moving to new locales, the travel season starts to pick up. People look at the flat land around them and yearn for inspiration. And of course, our UU season's coming to an end. Those things that we sometimes wished would last forever, and some of those things that we feared might last forever, the former things are passing away. And behold, it seems as if all things are being made new. And when the world as we know it has ended, hope helps us build a world as we will know it. In my own life, when I found that of all the reinventing of myself I'd done in high school had disappeared the very first day I set foot in college, and when I felt dwarfed by the endless buildings and the endless crowds the day I set foot in Chicago, and when I felt exposed with the lack of buildings and the lack of crowds when I set foot in Winona, I brought with me the hope that I could adapt. The idea that this was just a change. It wasn't the end of the world. Hope reminds us that our endings are necessarily tied with new beginnings. I started out talking about the doomsday clock, so I guess I'd like to finish by talking about another kind of clock. Somewhere inside a mountain in western Texas, engineers are perfecting a clock that's hundreds of feet tall. This clock is designed to run and chime periodically for 10,000 years. Now, our civilization has been around for about 10,000 years at this point, and that's a lot of missed apocalypses. And we're at a point where we can design something like this, the clock of the long now, it's called. The clock's creators are asking the same question Jonas Salk once asked. Are we being good ancestors? The clock is waiting for people to appreciate it in the year 12,014 to keep our apocalypse-free streak going strong. That represents an incredible amount of hope. The time we have is a gift. We're reminded of our own power, our possibility with each tick of the clock. When we're focused on improving tomorrow, one day at a time, it's not hard to hear the constant ticking sound is a heartbeat, an unrelenting reminder of our hope to bring about the beginning of a better world. Today, I would like to welcome three new members to our congregation. And so I would like to ask Fred Foss, Karen Lynn, and Pam Richardson to come forward. Today, these three members have decided that this religious community is where they felt challenged for their work in the world, and their commitment to us is a reason for hope in the fellowship. You each have? Oh, fantastic. You're more prepared than I am today. please read along on your handout as we welcome these three new members to our congregation. We have joined together as a fellowship to accomplish good things together. We cannot do so alone. We gratefully acknowledge the choice to join with us in the life of our religious community.
I become a member of this fellowship, aware of the principles and sources of Unitarian Universalism. I understand the significant responsibilities of membership. I bring to the fellowship my time and talents, my willingness to serve, and my heritage question.
We are eager to share our fellowship and our vision. We need your strength and courage. We welcome you and offer you our hands in fellowship. May we be deserving of your affirmation. This morning, we renew our covenant to seek and speak the truth, to love one another without prejudice, and to respond with heartfelt efforts to the demands of justice.
I share your aspirations and join you in this covenant.
Therefore, united in our community, having affirmed one another, and having reviewed our best intentions, let us go on about the work of this fellowship. Let us build together the universal church, which shall make all races, creeds, and nations one human fellowship of peace and goodwill to dwell together in harmony on this small planet.
So we have a gift for you so that every time you have a cup of coffee and every time you need a cup of coffee, you can be reminded that you are welcome in a group, a wonderful group of Unitarian Universalists.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
I got a special thanks for you guys.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us, Brad.
Today, we also celebrate the graduation of one of the young members of our fellowship, Max Flukoff. So I would like to ask Patty Neal to come up and say a few words about Max.
Hi, Max. Max has been in this fellowship about, when he came, he was about a Lily's age. I remember.
I don't.
I remember him coming clear back then. And in the time he's obviously grown, he was always one of my helpers at the Catholic Worker. And I remember there was a group of boys, because a whole bunch graduated last year, and he was tagging along with them. And they'd get so rambunctious, we'd go outside, and I'd say, "Now run around the block." Three or four times, just so I could get them to calm down. But we provided lots and lots of chili for the Catholic Worker. We did that every month, or every 6 weeks or something. Yeah. Okay. At Winona Senior High, he played alto and the tenor sax, and he just started playing the banjo this last year. He received a Strive for Leadership scholarship in his sophomore year, and he's been in cross-country football and wrestling. But what he has maintained and keeps doing is he's an avid weightlifter. As you can see, look at his arm. He works now at Omni Engineering as a janitor and as a lifeguard at the Aquatic Center. And his first job, though, was babysitting for Ari Von Toll, who was one of our, actually, that's where we fixed the Catholic Worker food, but he was Ari's babysitter for a long time. And he's also taking care of the UU tots when the grown-ups are in the service. He's done that. His favorite he likes to eat bacon cheeseburgers, especially if there's a fried egg. And his teacher, he liked his chemistry teacher, Mr. Feldhag. Miss Pearson and Miss Armstrong in English were his favorite teacher. He also liked Mr. Begley's environmental studies course, and it was instrumental in influencing his decision to attend Northland College, which is on Lake Superior in Wisconsin. It's a place where they have been had a focus on environmental missions since 1971. And so he'll be going there and probably, I suppose, kayaking on Lake Superior. And he hopes to study biology and chemistry and environmental science in college. And we are just really proud of him. And what does he get?
Gets that mug, yep.
And this is famous Unitarian Universalist, Paul Revere, Henry David Thoreau, Louis Jimmy Alcott, I won't read them all.
Et cetera.
So good luck, Max. Oh, do we have to say something?
Oh, no. Max has also agreed to read a short monologue that he's written.
Yeah, and also play the banjo.
And also a musical selection.
Just to set the mood.
So just before he does that, I would like to also honor Isaac Hitz Graff, one of our longtime members, too, who just, I think this week, he's probably studying finals right now, will graduate from Luther College and go on to, he's going to Denver and he's going to work doing something with the poor. I'm not exactly sure what. Anyway, so two graduates.
While you're getting ready, I'd also like to call Jenny McHugh up, who I just found out 15 minutes ago also graduated.
So I'm going to read a monologue about a man looking back on his past as a young boy in Rude, Mississippi. And I just right now I'm going to set the mood first with this banjo. Maybe you guys have heard this song before. I recall days past, nostalgic splendor wherein my youth inhabited. I long for the old days from the small town of Mill Haven, Mississippi. Those days I used to sit along the strong river with my best friend Boris and my faithful dog Winthrop. And we used to watch the windmill churn up the crystal clear water that moved the machines that made our bread. Between the three of us, we found more mischief in those woods than I dare say Lewis and Clark when they explored the frontier. Those woods were our frontier, though. We explored every rock and tree in that forest all the way to Jackson County. And about when that time came around, we knew we'd be late for supper, and I reckon Mom'd be pretty near worried sick about us. Back in those days, it was simple. All I had to worry about was Burris getting us into more trouble than we could handle. Burris was an odd one, definitely, but he had a way of putting his words you couldn't help but want to figure out what he meant. He always talked about stuff he wasn't actually talking about. My mama always did say that Burris sure makes a spot of embellishing himself. Looking back, I wouldn't say his rather premature knowledge of metaphors and rhetoric was a disadvantage. Even when you knew he didn't know what he was saying, he sure sounded like he knew. He was aware of this rather advantageous attribute and employed it on more than one occasion where we would have gotten in trouble. Of course, he always had the ideas that we should go on these adventures in the first place. And I, a rather malevolent young fellow, always appreciated the opportunity to get into trouble, especially if Burris could talk us out of any repercussions of our actions. But then I remember that those days are gone, as is that forest. And Burris is gone, too. Yeah, so that was that.
Next, we're going to present a musical selection for you, Forever Young, Bob Dylan's Forever Young. So I'd like to ask the occasional choir to come up and join us.
And watch your step.
Kathy requested that we sing this for Max as he goes off into adult life. Anyway, but I think it's a song we can just all take to heart.
build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung. And may you stay forever young. Forever young. Forever young. May you stay forever young. May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous, stand upright and be strong, and may you stay forever young. Always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of changes shift. May your heart always be joyful, and may your song always be sung, and may you stay forever young. Forever.
Stand. In body or spirit, as we sing number 346. Come sing a song with me. 346.
Come sing a song with me. Come.
be seated for music, followed by a brief period for silent meditation. We read together number 560 in the hymnal. Number 560. People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. It's too much work to do. Go in peace.